So my name is Golan Samari, and I became interested in this topic when I was completing my dual degree MPH and an MA in Islamic Studies at UCLA. I became interested in sort of the legal evolution of female genital circumcision, or FGC, FGM, which I'll refer to it as both sort of throughout the presentation. Those are the shorter ways of saying female genital circumcision due to time constraints. I have no disclosures. So as a brief introduction, FGC is basically the medical unnecessary modification of female genitals. The WHO estimates about 140 million women worldwide are living with the consequences. It occurs in an estimated 26 to 43 African countries. And on the African continent, it's estimated that 92 million girls ages 10 years and above have undergone FGC. Additionally, each year, about 3 million girls are circumcised on the African continent, most commonly Egypt, Eritrea, Sudan, and Tanzania, and this research is focusing on Egypt. Despite the work to reduce the rates of FGC, according to the Egyptian Demographic Health Survey 2008, which also informs this research, there is over a 90% rate in Egypt. In Egypt in particular, there's a history of political, religious, and cultural complexity. The origins of FGC in the country are actually unknown, but it predates Islam. And oftentimes it's assumed that FGC is an Islamic practice, but it's actually practiced by both Christians and Muslims in Egypt, and I'll have a map to show that later. So why is FGC an issue, and why should we talk about it? So it's internationally viewed as a violation of the human rights of girls and women. There are four different types, and it varies in severity, from minor cuts to complete stitching of the female's genital area. The operation is frequently done without an anesthetic, and there's different complications, which I've listed for you, including problems with menstruation, intercourse. Specifically, there's been mixed results from studies that have done evaluation of which of these outcomes are more important and it's the most risky for, but psychosexual studies have shown that the psychosexual effects are often lifelong. So the objectives of this work were basically to analyze the spatial distribution of female genital circumcision and associated indicators in Egypt, utilize hotspot analysis to highlight areas that should be the focus of future programmatic efforts, and it shows you how GIS, or geographic information systems, can be utilized as a tool to do intervention needs assessment or to highlight areas in which there's the most need. For those of you who are not familiar with hotspot analysis, it basically looks at each feature in the context of other features and neighboring features, and to be a statistically significant hotspot, the feature needs to be high or low for a particular indicator that you specify or set of indicators, and also the surrounding features need to be high or low as well. So the methods for this, the data sources were the 2008 Egypt Demographic and Health Survey, which was actually the first DHS in Egypt that asked both ever-married women and never-married women ages 15 to 49 about their FGC history. So it's the first time that you really have captured those who have been married and those who have not in the FGC rates. I also used the 2006 Egyptian census for my basic population statistics, and then I used global administrative area maps, which included the water sources and the cities and the roads to sort of make the maps more robust. I used ArcGIS version 10 to conduct the analysis, and I used a variety of GIS techniques, including buffering and aggregating subsections and modeling and metadata analysis, and I'm happy to talk about those more later if you have questions about those. And then, of course, I utilize hotspot analysis as I described to you. So this is just a background map to show you where Egypt is in the continent of Africa, and that there's 25 governorates, and they're each labeled for you. And this analysis was done at the governorate level, so throughout I will label particular governorates that are of importance to highlight for you. This is a basic map of the population of Egypt. It shows you that the most populated areas are towards the northeast. The highest populated governorates include Cairo, Giza, and Sharqiyah. The lower populated regions are the bordering areas. Those generally have populations under 500,000, where the highest populated areas have populations over over 5 million people. You can see the highest and lowest populated areas are labeled for you. This is showing you two different layouts. The base map is the population of Egypt, but I wanted to highlight the urban areas for you. So the map on the left is showing you the major cities in Egypt. As you can see, the ones in red, Alexandria, Cairo, Giza, all have populations over 1 million people. The map on the, I guess it would be your right side, is showing you the road infrastructure as well as the water sources, and then I did a buffer around the major cities to show you sort of where the urban areas would be. This is important to consider because, as background information, because a lot of times SGC is viewed as a rural phenomenon, and keeping this in mind moving forward, it'll become apparent that it happens in both rural and urban places. Here is the percentage of FGM or FGC by governorate. The darker orange regions are the higher prevalent areas, as you can see in those areas like New Valley or Fayoum or Sharqiya or Kafr al-Sheikh, there's rates between 98% and 100%. I've labeled the highest rate areas for you. This will be the base map for the rest of the maps moving forward, so you can see other indicators layered on top of this rate of FGM throughout the country. You have low areas like Matru in the upper left. It is a rate of 29%. There's actually a lot of Bedouin populations in that particular area of the country, and I didn't do analysis to necessarily tell you whether that has something to do with it, but as a descriptive look, it could be interesting to explore whether there's lower rates in that area due to the Bedouin populations being there and their beliefs. This next map is showing you the age distribution. The ones that are labeled are the governorates in which more than 50% of girls were circumcised before the age of 10. As you can see, the base map is the FGM rates, and then the point, the graduated symbols on top, is your rates of girls circumcised at age 10 or younger. So the interesting thing to note here is that based on earlier maps and this map, you can see that rural, urban sort of is all over the place. The rates are high in areas that are considered rural as well as areas that are considered urban. Cairo has between 64 and 77% rate. All right. This is the distribution of Christians and Muslims according to the reported EDHS 2008. I layered the Christian symbols on top of the symbols for the Muslims just to illustrate. It's majority Muslim, but in some areas you have up to 17% Christian population. And even in those areas like Duhag, you have one of the highest rates of FGM still occurring. So it's interesting to see the religious distribution. So there's this question that I was drawn to in the demographic health survey, and it was whether FGC or FGM is mandated by religion. So a lot of people think that the practice is perpetuated because people think that religion requires them to continue either Christianity or Islam. And the interesting thing that this map shows that people understand that it might not be mandated by religion, but yet still continue to do it. So you can see in areas like Red Sea, there is a high belief that it does mandate it, and there's like a sort of a medium belief that, or a medium occurrence of FGM. It sort of varies. So this sort of shows you that in which areas there's still a lot of FGM, there's still a variety of beliefs about whether religion does it or not. Essentially, it shows you that there's a lot of confusion and mixed results on whether FGM does it or not, is mandated or not. So this layout aims to show you the distribution of whether a physician conducted the circumcision or a traditional birth attendant. And as you can see, the physician graduated symbols are labeled on top of the traditional birth attendant ones because majority of circumcisions are done by traditional birth attendants up to rates like 96% reported. You have as high as 37% physician-led circumcisions in areas like the Red Sea or Qenna. But you can see it's majority traditional birth attendants. Now, there's an interesting legal history behind this, as in 1996, FGC was banned from being performed in hospitals and health clinics, and so you could say that, you know, that's part of the reason there's a shift to the traditional birth attendants, or you can say that perhaps traditional birth attendants have always been used, and so that's what's been continued to be used. But in Egypt, in the legal history, there's been shifts back and forth between allowing it in hospitals to try to medicalize the practice and then realizing maybe that's not the best approach and then banning it in hospitals. So it's always important to look at who is conducting the circumcisions depending on the legal context at the time. So this, I used the 2006 census data to look at health facility availability in certain governorates to try to see whether, you know, are you using traditional birth attendants because there isn't a health facility available nearby? And this map shows you that, no, that's not really the case. You can see that, like, in the Red Sea and South Sinai, there's 28 to 37% physician circumcisions. The base map for this is the physician circumcisions. And then there's between 18 and 47 hospitals. So there's still, you know, hospitals available there. Not as much as the areas in which there's like 146 to 256 hospitals, which is a significantly more number, but yet they have the highest rate of doctor-led circumcision. So again, this shows you it appears to not have anything to do with the availability of health facilities, whether somebody utilizes a doctor or not. So this is the hotspot analysis in which it targeted those areas in which there was high female genital circumcision. There's a high belief that religion requires female genital circumcision. There was a belief that FGC should continue. So the belief that, yes, moving forward, I'm going to circumcise my daughter. This is a practice that should continue. There was a high use of traditional birth attendants, and then a high occurrence of those who are circumcised before the age of 10. So this shows you, I've labeled the highest and high areas for programmatic focus. The highest priority governorates are New Valley, Kalubia, Manufia, and Kafr el-Sheikh, and the high priority governorates are Aswan, Qenna, Suhang, and Asyut. So this is important for programmatic efforts because if you're working on FGC in Egypt and you look at these variety of indicators and these hotspots come up, then you can see, well, perhaps this is good for resource allocation in these areas, or we should focus on these areas, and we've actually been focusing on these other places. So just before I get into sort of the discussion and implications of this research, let me give you the strengths and limitations. So it's a nationally representative sample, the DHS 2008, and as I said, it's the first time it captured, you know, those who are never married or ever married. It's a visual representation of high-risk areas. What I really wish that I had and I'm working to get is the actual health facility locations as opposed to an aggregate number of how many are in each governorate. And Egypt is really working on having a more robust, like, GIS data system, so hopefully that information will be available shortly. And I'm going to use some of the addresses and things to get that to be more specific. Also, the time when this survey was administered, the 2008 Egyptian Demographic and Health Survey. As you may know, a lot has happened in Egypt since 2008. So in 2008, actually, there was a child law banning FGC from occurring in the country, but the DHS was also administered in 2008, so it'd be interesting to see what has happened since then. But then you have groups speaking out in favor of FGC as well in recent times due to the revolution and changing government there. So we'll see how it goes. It'll be interesting to see the results from the next demographic and health survey and how things have been changing. As a discussion point, this shows you that FGC remains high in several governorates in Egypt. It also shows you that the majority of FGC procedures are conducted by traditional birth attendants at age 10 years of age or younger, and it does not appear to be related to health facility availability. It also shows you that attitudes remain complex. Women are aware that religion doesn't mandate it, yet continue to practice it. And women Many women want the practice to continue. Other reports show that men and women sort of have different reasons for wanting the practice to continue, so it would be interesting to also sort of outline the men's attitudinal preferences countrywide. So what are the implications? So GIS is a useful tool, as you can see, for highlighting areas for future efforts. Current programs, if you look at what's going on in Egypt, focus on Beni Suef, Menya, Esyut, Suhad, Qenna, and Aswan. But the hotspot analysis showed several other high priority areas and highest priority areas that should also be targeted. So it would be interesting to use this for the organizations working on the ground to use this to see where there's additional need. And the analysis also confirms that the dialogue and efforts to address FGC should continue in Egypt. So I just want to thank Dr. Leo Estrada at UCLA for his help with this research. And then if you need to reach me, my email address is up there. Thank you so much.
Well, that was really incredible presentations by student professionals. It's a much better term to describe our group of presenters. We have a little over 10 minutes for the questions and discussion. I think this mic will stretch so we can sort of move it over and allow individuals to respond to the questions. So, questions and comments? Yes, sir.
Ms. Nellens, did you measure exposure to previous mental health services, particularly since the UK has the universal healthcare program?
The South Eastern Community Health Survey, which is a cross-sectional study we got the data from, does look at health service use in the UK and previous diagnosis by doctors, current medications being used, as well as other resources they might have used to pursue health needs if it wasn't in a formal national health service location. I didn't look at that specifically in my own study. My research was less focused on them. On health service provision, but this is a really critical issue, and I think it definitely needs to be accounted for in future research, particularly in larger samples where more variables can be used and there's a larger power to explore more compounded. Thank you.
Other questions? Please. We'll look back here first.
Hi, it was a wonderful presentation. I had a question for the last speaker, Bobby.
Sure.
About, you mentioned what programmatic efforts you can play or where they're taking place.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, what do they involve?
Oh, yeah, sure.
What is the extent of those
sure.
efforts?
So there's two main efforts going on right now. So the National Council on Childhood and Motherhood has partnered with UNDP, and they're working with a lot of actually religious leaders and community-based organizations and doing some mass media stuff. And UNICEF has a similar effort, but it's like outside NGOs coupled with sort of national councils doing efforts on the ground. And the good thing is that they've really harnessed like a religious local leadership to address the needs of the people. And there's like a free FGM village project they just came out with an interim report, actually, that's the UNDP one, earlier this year. So they're making some progress in some like process evaluation of how they're moving forward there. But yeah, so I mean, the only concerning thing is like, given the change in the government and the priorities being different things, you know, getting a new government structure intact, it'll be interesting to see if these efforts are disrupted or if they'll continue.
There was a question right here.
So I looked at GM as well in Egypt, and it's really hard to find incidence rates, so you hear a lot about prevalence.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the 2008 data had something about unmarried women if they're younger, and so if you had a statistic about women who are 75 to 10 years old or younger, how many of those women are 50 years old, how many of them are 15 years old?
Yeah, I mean, you can do it by age. You can run the sort of cross tab by age and figure out. It asks them for age of circumcision, so you can figure it out. The age range is between 15 and 49. The other interesting thing is ask them about their intentions towards their daughters, and it'll ask them whether their daughter has been circumcised or if they intend to circumcise their daughter. So, I mean, it's a one-time cross-section, so it is hard to get at that, yeah.
There was a question in the back.
Yeah, I was wondering internal challenges, but on a broader scale. So My question, I guess, and backtrack and say that you can probably draw a lot of parallels with what the U.S. government uses health as a tool in diplomacy as well. I mean, look at activities conducted by State Department, USAID, and DOD to get access to imports. So instead of looking internally, it's used externally. But point being is, how does the international community view Hezbollah, and how would that impact their ability to take a larger role or responsibility in supporting the ministry?
I really like this question, but it's a difficult one to answer because maybe it's challenging for these people to bring on the ground specifically. I mean, as we also take the United States, they use them as a terrorist group, so there's no way that the U.S. will ever work with Hezbollah in this domain. Even any American development agency will refuse to work with Hezbollah unofficially. But as I said in my presentation, there are a lot of developmental agencies that are willing to work with Hezbollah rescue workers, but not under the Hezbollah flag. So they will work on under the Lebanese flag, but with Hezbollah healthcare workers. So it depends on who you ask. And some European agencies as well are willing to work with Hezbollah rescue workers on the same level and informal level as these various developmental agencies. But I know for a fact that the United States is not ready to take this step just yet.
Great. Great question. Great response. We have one. Any other questions? Well, can we give our presenters again? This is a huge.